Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David Latulippe. We'll hear about some holiday offerings from a couple of different ensembles. Arketti, John Dornenberg, is director of that Baroque ensemble. I'll talk with him about their concert offerings coming up. Also hear from the San Francisco choral artists and Megan Solomon and her guest percussionist, Peter Mund. On the Broadway front, we'll have talk with a couple of the cast members from both The Lion King at the Orpheum and Rodney Earl Jackson and Nancy Zappe, who are in She Loves Me at the San Francisco Playhouse, will also be by. Stay with us.
When he was a young warthog.
When I was a young warthog.
Very nice.
Thanks.
He found his aroma lacked a certain appeal. He could clear the savannah after every meal.
I'm a sensitive soul.
Hakuna Matata from the original cast recording on Broadway of The Lion King. I think we could all use a little Hakuna Matata after the last couple of months we've been through here in the United States. Well, The Lion King is back in town, the amazing and incredibly innovative production, which first was seen in its stage musical version back in 1997 in Minneapolis at the Orpheum Theater, coincidentally, subsequently moving to Broadway at the New Amsterdam later that year, and then later moving to the Minskoff Theater, where it's still running after more than 6,700 performances. It is Broadway's third longest running show in history and the highest grossing Broadway production of all time, having grossed more than $1 billion. And it's been seen by over 85 million people, 17 million here in the U.S. alone, has been translated into 8 different languages, and having played in over 100 cities in some 20 countries, The Lion King's worldwide gross exceeds that of any film, any Broadway show, or any other entertainment franchise in box office history. The Lion King phenomena comprises the well-known 1994 American animated feature, with 2 later direct-to-video sequel films, a television special, 2 spin-off TV series, 3 educational shorts, several video games, merchandise, and the Broadway show, which garnered 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical. It's the musical version that is a must-see theatrical experience, yours in San Francisco only through the end of this month at the Orpheum. Gerald Ramsey, who plays the role of Mufasa, is a graduate of the University of Hawaii at Hilo. Originally from the island of Anu'u in American Samoa, Gerald was also raised in Jeddah, Saudi Arabia. Welcome to you, Gerald.
Thank you so much for having me, my man.
Of course. Nice to have you back again, actually. Bui Zama, who plays Rafiki, was born in Durban, South Africa. She's performed in Lion King productions on Broadway, London's West End, Las Vegas, Taipei, Johannesburg, the list goes on, and now the U.S. National Tour. Among her honors have been an M.O. Award for Female Musical Performer of the Year. She also does a fair share of session work and backing vocalists, vocalist work for a variety of international artists. Welcome to you, Buya. Welcome to Open
Thank
Air.
Thank you very much for having me.
You have been with the production of Lion King for 15 years?
Well, it will be 15 years in February, so yeah.
So you must have bought one of those small islands somewhere.
I wish.
Well, we, as Rafiki the Mandrill, you start off the show calling all the animals together. Now, unless you've been living under a rock, fair listener, you've probably a good idea of what the storyline of The Lion King is. But for those listeners who maybe make their home under rocks or other affordable housing, why don't you tell us the story of the basic storyline of The Lion King, if you could?
Well, the basic story of The Lion King is... So it's really about Simba. I think it's about me, but it's about Simba. It's about...
That'll be the sequel, Rafiki, the musical.
Yeah. It's about this young cub and him just... He's a very curious, active young cub. And unfortunately, his father dies, Gerald Ramsay here. And he just has to find his way back. And he thinks he's to blame for his father's death. But he has to find his way back to firstly forgiving himself and to taking back the throne, going back home to the Pride Lands. So it's a story about that. It's about good overcoming evil.
So how are you starting off the production? I mean, calling the animals together and such?
As in, how do I do it?
You can feel free to sing out a chorus or two if you'd like.
That's all right. I haven't warmed up.
So what happens after everything is over? Are you the main storyteller of the
I movie? Am the main storyteller. I'm the only character. No, that's a lie. Zazu also does this. But I break the fourth wall. So I talk to the audience quite a few times.
Are you the only one that does that?
Zazu does it once in the show, but I feel like throughout the show I'm talking to the audience because I am telling the whole story, even though they see it. It's through me that they see it. So I'm in the story and I'm also telling the story.
Nice. And you are appearing with His Highness King Mufasa?
Yes.
Gerald Ramsay, who was last on open air when Motown came to town. Was that?
Different guest.
Oh, different guest. Okay.
I thought I lost my memory.
Maybe you were. No, you weren't. Yeah. But you had a rather unusual path to this production. Tell us how you heard about the audition in Hawaii.
Man, well, I was living in the North Shore in Oahu, and I was a dancer, a Polynesian dancer. And a friend of mine told me that Lion King is in town. And hardly no big productions ever make it to Hawaii. It's so far and so expensive. But the Lion King came...
Because they can afford it.
Because they can afford it. But none of us could afford to watch it. So I was like, oh, that's cute. But then my friend told me they were having open auditions. And I honestly was not interested at all, right? I mean, I've never dreamed of Broadway. I've never dreamed of being a performer professionally. And long story short, she offers me a free lunch if I go to the audition. And I said, yeah, let's do it, which has kind of been the story of my life. Like, that's why I'm here. I heard there's free food, so I'm here to get the free food.
I've got half an empanada.
I'll take it.
So a first experience for you as a touring professional now in a major Broadway show. What's it been like?
It's been unbelievable, and I really thought from the beginning that, man, maybe I bamboozled them in the audition when they told me I got the role. And they're going to send you back home. So I didn't tell anyone in my family, none of my friends, that I got the role until I was on the plane taking off to Philadelphia to start training, because I couldn't believe it myself. And I find myself sometimes to this day thinking, man, I'm here a year and a half later. I still can't believe that they still want me around.
You know what? I feel the same way, because I'm like, it's been so many years. One day they're going to figure it out. I'm not talented.
I don't believe that for a second. And chances are, boy, you think he's doing a fairly good job as a Mufasa.
Oh, he's amazing. He is. And also, he's such a nice guy.
They don't know the real me. They keep feeding me, so I'm very nice.
The lion sleeps tonight. Yeah. All right. Tell us a little bit more about the role of Mufasa then.
So Mufasa...
Were you influenced by the movie, first of all, before you even thought of the stage production? You must have seen that animated film or not.
I have. So this might be some advice to whoever's listening out there. When I first walked into the role, I thought, oh, I got to be James Earl Jones, you know? And then when I watched the Mufasa who came before me, L. Stephen Taylor, who's now on Broadway, I thought, oh, I got to be L. Stephen Taylor. And I stepped into the audition room, and the first thing the director told me was, We don't want, if we wanted L. Stephen Taylor, we would have kept him. If mm-hmm. we wanted James Earl Jones, we would have asked him, but we want you. We see something in you that you bring that's unique. I was like, they want me to be myself? Like, that's crazy. Are you sure? And that's how I relate to Mufasa every day. I think of the upbringing I had back in the islands in Samoa. I think of my grandparents and my parents and my uncles and how they raised me. And those are the emotions that I try to emulate on stage. And that's a part of me who I bring on the stage, especially when I have to scold little Simba. I got lots of scoldings growing up. That's the easier part for me to do.
So the training for the show started out in Philadelphia. Is that where the national tour started as well? Or
no, the national tour started in Denver, mm-hmm. which we got to play last year.
So why Philadelphia? Is that just where it's headquartered?
It's where the show was at the time.
Okay.
So the show keeps moving around. Like, it started in 2002, and wherever the show is at the time, that's where the new person, whoever they are, whatever role they're going to be playing, is going to be rehearsing.
Mm-hmm. So, Gerald, how long have you been with the production then?
About a year and a half now.
About a year and a half. And boy, how do you keep it so fresh after 15 years? Is there some secret formula? Is it a drug involved or a caffeine? Or
I sleep a lot. I don't even, no caffeine at all. But I always just think the audience, it's their first time or second time, and they don't want to see anyone boring. And I don't know if this makes sense, but I always have to remember to forget that I was there the day before, and it's always fresh. Mm-hmm. So I remind myself to forget that I was there and just make it fresh every day.
Incidentally, the costume creator, Julie Taymor, who was the show's original director as well as mask co-designer, she was the first woman to win a Tony for direction of a musical.
I know.
And she continues to supervise new productions around the world some 19 years later. So I should mention some of those other awards. I mentioned the Tonys: Best Musical, Best Direction of a Musical, Julie Taymor; Best Choreography; Best Scenic Design, Richard Hudson; as well as Best Costume Design, again Julie with Michael Curry; and Best Lighting Design of a Musical. There's lots of bests going on.
Yeah,
in the Lion King.
And Julie was the person that decided to change the character gender, the Rafiki character
right.
and made it a woman. So I got a job.
That's right. We've just been boys' night out at the Lion King otherwise.
Yes.
So, Gerald, are these cities that you're discovering for the first time on tour?
Yes, every city we've been to is my first time, with the exception of Portland, Oregon, where I have a lot of family, and there's a lot of Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. I came to San Francisco once before for a wedding about 5 years ago, and it was basically in and out. But besides that, everything has been a brand new experience. Not just, I mean, besides the production itself and the job, the locations, I've never been to any of these places before.
Well, that's also got to be a challenge, too, because your first priority is the Lion King and being mm-hmm. at 110% each night, even though you'd probably like to explore some of these cities you're visiting.
And I think that's a lot of my family asked me, like, oh, have you seen this or seen that? My friends who live in the city, I'm like, no, for me, this job is my priority number one. So I end up resting a lot more than I expected. Mm-hmm. And when I leave a city, I do think, oh, I wish I would have seen that and that. But then I could check my bank account, and I'm like, oh, the check cleared. Okay,
I'll fly
good.
Back some other time. Should also give a shout-out to Mark Campbell, who is playing Scar.
Oh, yeah.
Nick Corleone as Timon, Drew Hirschfeld as Zazu, and Ben Lipsitz as Pumbaa, among some of the other cast of characters. And I should mention that the production just goes through the end of this month. I think we're going to go out with some more of the great music of Sir Elton John and Tim Rice and a little Can You Feel the Love Tonight.
All right.
Gerald Ramsey as Mufasa, Buizama as Rafiki, thanks so much for taking some time today, and have a wonderful tour, not only finishing out here in San Francisco, but wherever that next city is.
New Orleans.
New Orleans. Here we go. That's a good place to be in January,
yeah.
I think.
And lots of food.
Lion King at the Orpheum Theater. Information for remaining tickets, shnsf.com. Through the end of this month, catch the Lion King at the Orpheum. Good afternoon, David LaTulipe. More theater to come. We'll have a couple of cast members from She Loves Me at the San Francisco Playhouse. Rodney Earl Jackson, who plays Mr. Kodai, and Nancy Zappi, who plays Miss Ritter. We'll talk about the San Francisco Playhouse production of She Loves Me, which runs through January 14th or so. More wonderful holiday offerings here on Open Air, getting my paperwork in order here. The San Francisco Choral Artists presents a program called Light in Winter. The Choral Artists' artistic director since 1995 has been Megan Solomon, who joins me in studio to talk about the concerts. Under her leadership, SFCA has established a number of innovative initiatives, including the Composer In and Not In residence programs, the Composer's Invitational, the New Voices Project competition to help launch the artistic careers of young composers under age 30, as well as the FCA Plus One to expand repertoire for chamber choir and a single instrument. Percussionist Peter Mund is this year's Plus One, who also joins us in studio for a conversation, and the Wildcard Program to expand FCA composer support. During her tenure, Megan has premiered over 230 vocal works, and along with the choral artists in general, and released three CDs, the most recent of which, With Strings Attached, released in 2011, in collaboration with our good friends, the Alexander String Quartet. She's collaborated on performances of major choral works with the likes of MTT, Kent Nagano, Nicholas McGeegan, Christoph von Dohnányi, among others. The Bay Area is indeed richer thanks to her commitment to presenting a wide range of new music and her eclectic approach to programming. Welcome back, Megan.
Thank you. Delighted to be here.
She is joined by percussionist Peter Mund, who studied at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music and studied music, folklore, and ethnomusicology at UC Berkeley. He's a founding member of Ensemble Alcatraz and Alistair Fraser's Sky Dance and has performed with many vocal and instrumental groups, including Anonymous Four and Chanticleer, as well as Musica Pacifica and the Philharmonia Baroque Orchestra and Voices, among others. Peter has taught at UC Berkeley and the Amherst Early Music School, I guess it is, and can be heard on more than 50 recordings. Peter, welcome to you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Megan, so just on this program alone, four world premieres. Tell us a little bit about your programming choices for this program.
Well, actually, four is a small number for us. Often it's as many as 12. But the ones we have, as you mentioned, a composer in residence. And this year that is Eleanor Armour, who teaches at the conservatory, wonderful composer. And she's written a piece called Druid Prayer. And our composer not in residence is Paul Chihara, who's a longtime friend of the San Francisco Choral Artists. He taught at UCLA for many, many years and is now primarily in New York. And he wrote a very sweet Christmas piece about a cat under the mistletoe called Momo in Mistletoe. The other two premieres, Paul Crabtree, who's also a local composer, lives in Oakland, and Monica Houghton's Te Ante Lucem.
And also some traditional, more familiar composers to us, like the music of Samuel Barber will also be featured.
Absolutely. Chorales of Bach, and interesting pieces by Kodai, Zoltán Kodály, Poulenc, and then some probably lesser known pieces by Robert Strasberg, Brian Kelly, and Carolyn Maloney, a composer I just discovered recently.
Mm-hmm. Saturday's concert will be at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Palo Alto, then Sunday in Oakland at St. Paul's Episcopal, and then Sunday, December 18th at St. Mark's Lutheran in San Francisco. So how did you decide to collaborate with Peter later this season?
Well, the SFCA Plus One program has been a lot of fun for us. We've been doing a lot of a cappella choral music for the 21 years I've been with the group, and we thought it would be nice to, there's a great deal of music written for a cappella chamber chorus, but I was always looking to expand with different colors. There's a kind of a limit to what you can do with voices, even though it's a wide range. And the addition of an instrument seemed like a nice thing to do. So we thought there are very few things that are as different from voices as percussion. Peter's well known in the area. I have known about him for the 25 years that I've been in town. And this is my first chance to collaborate with him. So we snatched the opportunity.
Great. So Peter, what sort of things are you bringing to FCA for us?
Well, Megan and I are still exploring possibilities, but we're looking at repertoire are that's along the theme of East meets West. So we'll have music that's inspired from both Eastern musical traditions, as well as the Middle East and Eastern Europe, as well as Western musical traditions, which is an area that I've been involved with for several years.
I was going to say, your work at your study at the UC Berkeley, and I imagine now as a teacher teaching that as well.
Well, I taught there previously, yes, when I was, this was some years ago.
Some more holiday thoughts, Megan. You mentioned that Samuel Barber's work is going to be on that. Let's get a little taste of that. Twelfth Night will be performed.
Indeed. And this one is of his finest.
And this is from?
From our CD, yes, So Gracious Is the Time.
Music of Samuel Barber, then more with Megan Solomon and Peter Mond. Music of Samuel Barber that will be featured in the San Francisco Choral Artists' production of Light in Winter this weekend and next here in the Bay Area. My guests, Megan Solomon and Peter Mund, who's involved with the San Francisco Choral Artists later in the season for their June concert. Peter, you mentioned that there's a special Egyptian tambourine that you've been working with that you're going to incorporate into the concerts.
Yes, the Egyptian tambourine is called a rick. R-I-Q, or R-I-Q-Q sometimes. It's a good Scrabble word, if it's allowed. and it's identical to the tambourines that we see in Western Europe, the medieval and Renaissance iconography. So we don't know what percussionists played in that repertoire, but we know the instrument and the holding position is identical to what we see that's currently used in some Middle Eastern countries.
Well, let's have a little sample of that. This is you performing on the rick?
Yeah, this is from a CD recorded some years ago.
Okay, and this will be featured, a little prelude for what we will hear from your pen and from your rick in June. Thank you. That's a little taste of Peter on the Rick. R-I-Q. Rolling on the Rick. Rick and roll. All
Rick
right. Well, Peter, we'll look forward to seeing what comes out of your collaboration with Megan for the June concerts. Megan, how many voices are involved in the Light and Winter concerts?
There are 16 singers.
16 singers. And how long have they been with you? Is it a fairly fluid group or a group that's been with you for a while?
One singer's been with the group since before I came 21 years ago. That's Tina Harrington, our assistant conductor. Some have been with the group for 8, 10, 12 years, some for 5 or 6, and some are new this year. There's a variety there.
Also, on this program, you mentioned that there'll be some music of Roger Nixon, who just passed away a couple of years ago.
Indeed.
Nice of you to include him on that. What will be performed of his works?
We'll do just one of his pieces called Star of Christmas Morning. It's a beautiful, beautiful work, and we're very lucky that Roger was a close friend of the choral artist, in fact, very close friend of the founder, Ralph Hooper, and has written many, many pieces for us. I think it's 14 works written for the choral artists, and it's beautiful music and with a very interesting and special harmonic language that's very distinctive.
Nice. Well, you can hear some Roger Nixon on the San Francisco Choral Artists CD, An American Christmas, So Gracious is the Time. In fact, let's hear a cut from Roger. What's the name of the title we're going to hear? So Gracious is the Time, right? Of Roger Nixon? Well, you tell me.
They're all wonderful. The one I had thought of was Green Growths and Holly.
Oh, right. Green Growths and Holly.
Cut 18.
18. Yeah, I got that all queued up. Music by the San Francisco Choral Artists, which you can hear in Palo Alto and Oakland this weekend and the next Sunday at San Francisco at St. Mark's Lutheran Church. Megan Solomon and Peter Mund, thank you for coming in today.
Thanks for having us.
We enjoy your music. beautiful sound of the San Francisco choral artists. Their concerts this Saturday at St. Mark's Episcopal Church in Palo Alto, Sunday at St. Paul's Episcopal in Oakland, and then next Sunday, December 18th, at St. Mark's here in San Francisco. Information on how to purchase their CDs is at their website, sfca.org. More holiday music before the hour is up here on Open Air. I'll be talking with John Dornenberg of Arcetti, which presents their concert offerings also in this coming week. David LaTulipe with you for Open Air, now featuring a really fun, what's becoming a holiday musical to make time for sure, at San Francisco Playhouse. The clerks from Marichek's shop thanking customers, and She Loves Me is one of the many clever tunes with lyrics and tight harmonies, with a book that goes back a ways to the Hungarian playwright Miklos Laszlo's Parfumerie, which was then adapted by Joe Masterhoff for the Broadway version. Masterhoff, who created the book for Cabaret. And then the Parfumerie was inspired by the 1940 James Stewart Margaret Sullivan classic film The Shop Around the Corner, and the 1949 Judy Garland Van Johnson musical In the Good Old Summertime, all of which inspired the Tom Hanks Meg Ryan film You've Got Mail. So quite a backstory to She Loves Me. Rodney Earl Jackson Jr. plays Mr. Kodai in the production. He made his Broadway debut in The Book of Mormon after graduating with a BFA from Carnegie Mellon, and was last seen traveling North America in the first national tour of Motown, the musical, for which he stopped into our studios. Welcome back, Rodney. He's a San Francisco native who graduated from the Ruth Asawa School of the Arts Theater Department and is now artistic director and co-founder of the San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company, a nonprofit arts organization which is comprised of San Francisco natives who support artists through creative development, full productions, and mentorships, engaging a new generation of live theater supporters and bridging the gap between youth and professional theater. Rodney, welcome back to Open Air.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
And Nancy Zoppi, who plays Miss Ritter, was last seen in the San Francisco Playhouse production of City of Angels. Great work on that, by the way. She trained at Circle in the Square Theater School in Manhattan and includes a number of New York shows to her credit. She's also been seen in productions at the Aurora Theater here in Berkeley, the B Street Theater in Washington, and the California Musical Theater's production of Suds. Nancy, welcome back to you. Did I get the B Street Theater location correct?
That's actually in Sacramento.
Sacramento, mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. I was thinking, well, I saw some other credits, like maybe the two are combined. I'm glad we cleared that up. Well, congratulations to both of you on such a fun and beautifully staged production. It's really a pleasure to watch as well as to hear.
Well, it's a pleasure to do it. So, thank you.
So, music is from the great Jerry Bach, who, with lyrics that are often just laugh out loud, funny, and clever, from the pen of Sheldon Harnick. That's the team that gave us the Tony Award-winning Fiddler on the Roof, mm-hmm. and Fiorello as well, which tied, I didn't realize, tied with The Sound of Music for Best Musical back in 1965.
I didn't know that either.
Anything could be Sound of Music. But yeah, that makes sense.
So Susie DeMilano, I should mention, is directing this show.
Yes.
She's got a lot of stage work to manage. This is a wonderfully rotating set that has been created for the San Francisco Playhouse stage.
Yeah, it takes place in three locations, Nancy.
Mm-hmm.
The street, the shop, and then the
cafe.
The cafe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So are you both familiar with the pedigree of the show in terms of its history and other productions of it?
You know, I had always appreciated some of the songs from the show, but as someone who does generally what I work on is contemporary musicals, it's very rare I do a golden era musical, so I wasn't as familiar with it, of course, as you get familiar once you're working on something, and you know, it has reinstated my love for the golden era musical. It's beautiful. It's so well done. The lyrics are so lovely. The book is so good. It really kind of shows why musical theater was so important to American history, yeah. I feel.
I had never heard of it, never at all. And I know a lot of old musicals growing up with youth organizations that would put us through golden age era musicals in the repertoire and the composers, but I never heard of this musical. But the music is astonishing. It's mm-hmm. so beautiful. And this score is just, I think it's the cherry on top for this show. The score is just brilliant.
Mm, nice.
Agreed.
And for those that aren't familiar with the pedigree and the, and how I mentioned the other films and the other stage versions of it, the plot revolves around your co-stars, really, George Nowak and Amalia Balazs. Let's get the plot out there, and then we'll talk about your specific characters. Yeah. Nancy, you want to take that? Nancy Zappi.
Well, you know, we start off with the clerks of the perfumery, and kind of you're trying to get a feel for what Budapest was like in 1937, which is right before the bottom dropped out, really, and World War II for Budapest. So we have this lovely place where people are working, and it's very clear the class distinction mm-hmm. between the workers and the patrons. And then we meet Amalia, who comes in and needs a job. Now, it's important to note at this time, unemployment was huge in Budapest. And if you know that, you know how important it is that she gets this job, and it could mean life or death to a lot of people. So there's an underlying note. Now, Amalia comes in. She has an altercation with George, who already works in the shop, which starts this just energy of feuding between the two of them. Unbeknownst to them, they are both falling in love with somebody they've never met, that they're writing letters to through a Lonely Hearts Club. And it goes on from there.
Yeah.
Now, Rodney, your character is Mr. Kodai. Tell us about Mr. Kodai.
Where do you begin? He is one of the clerks in the shop. He has an interesting take on life. I feel like he's a person who doesn't think he's only looking out for himself, but is only looking out for himself. I think he's thinking about money and power, especially in this world, this 1937 Eastern European world. Or is it Western European? In there. Who knows? It's changed so much.
Easternish with Hungary and all
that.
Right,
it's changed so much from now. And he has, he's in an affair with the
boss. Kind of a ladies' man,
yeah, the boss's wife. And he's also having a love affair with one of the clerks, the woman sitting next to me right now.
And tell us about your character, Nancy.
I play Ms. Ritter, who is a woman in her 30s, in the 30s, where being married is very, very important. And she is trying to find love desperately to live a life that she thinks that she wants to have. And she's trying to find that with the people who give her attention. And and Mr. Kodai gives her attention, and she wants it very badly. Thankfully, she goes through a bit of a journey throughout the show.
Yeah.
on that.
It's like a moth in a light.
Oh, yes.
Neither of them are really good for each other, but they just keep going back.
Mm-hmm. Your character, Alona, takes a trip to the library. You want to tell us about that trip?
And, yes!
in addition to fooling around with your co-star here.
That's true. Alona doesn't really put a high regard on being literate. And
that's the best way you can say that.
and in that regard, it's a very timely musical for most of America to see.
Oh, very true.
Right, and she's around people who never ask that of her, and having gone through what happens to be a catastrophic affair with Kodai for her personally. And emotionally, she wants to change things up, so she goes to the library, not knowing what's going to happen. And from there, her life starts changing for the better.
Let's hear a bit of that tune, then we'll talk more with the current characters that are playing at the San Francisco Playhouse, Rodney Earl Jackson as Mr. Kodai and Nancy Zappi, Miss Ritter. Here is Miss Ritter's Trip to the Library from the original Broadway revival.
I didn't know what to do or where to go, and somehow my feet started walking down the street, across the bridge, past the Metropole Cinema, and do you know where?
No, where?
Right into the library.
The library?
Can you imagine?
Well, how did you like it?
Oh, you've never seen such a place. So many books. So much marble. And so quiet. And suddenly all of my confidence dribbled away with a pitiful plop. My head was beginning to swim and my forehead was covered with cold perspiration. I started to reach for a book and my hand automatically came to a stop. I don't know how long I stood frozen, a victim of panic and mortification. Oh, how I wanted to flee. When a kindly voice, a gentle voice whispered, pardon me.
Pardon me.
And there was this dear, sweet, clearly respectable, thickly bespectacled man who stood by my side and quietly said to me, ma'am, don't mean to intrude, but I was just wondering, are you in need of some help? I said no. Yes, I am. The next thing I know, I'm sipping hot.
Well, you'll have to know the next thing to know for yourself by going to the San Francisco Playhouse and see what happens to Ilona in the personage of Nancy Zoppi, who's playing Miss Ritter. That was just Jane Krakowski in the Broadway revival. Miss Krakowski, by the way, will be here for New Year's Eve performing with the San Francisco Symphony. And thanks to Rodney Earl Jackson, your check is in the mail for that little tidbit that prompted us to do a little quick research on that.
You're welcome.
Well, you just heard a little taste of some of the really clever lyrics of Sheldon Harnick. Once again, the musical direction for this is by David Aaron Brown. Live music to accompany it all. It's at the Playhouse through January 14th. Always dangerous questions. What's next for you guys on the acting front?
Well, I'll be taking a little six-week break after this ends January 14th and coming back to San Francisco Playhouse to co-star in Noises Off.
Yes. Fantastic.
Amazing. I am currently, while portraying Mr. Kodai at SF Playhouse, I'm directing a production with my theater company, SF Baco, San Francisco Bay Area Theater Company. We're doing a co-production with the African American Shakespeare Company at the Herbst Theater this holiday season. We're doing Cinderella with an all African American cast. So if you want to come check us out, that'd be amazing.
Nice, nice.
Next week.
Ah, well, they'll be featured on our show next week.
Very cool.
My producer, Niels, tells me. Everyone's telling me things I should know already.
Amazing.
And you prefer hanging out in town rather than the touring production, Rodney? Or you like both?
I love San Francisco. You know, I've toured the country for 2.5 years. You know, there's no city like our city.
That's true. I'm happy here, too. And I'm happy that you're happy here, Rodney. Yeah. And we're all the better for having both you and Nancy Zoppi as part of the cast of characters in this Island of Misfit Toys, as I like to call it. Have a great run. Here's the title track from She Loves Me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Will wonders never cease? I didn't like her. Didn't like her. I couldn't stand her. Couldn't stand her, I wouldn't have her. I never knew her, but now I do, and I could, and I would, and I know. She loves me, and to my amazement, I love it, knowing that she loves me. She loves me, true, she doesn't show it. How could she, when she doesn't know it? Yesterday she loathed me, bah! Now today she likes me. And tomorrow, tomorrow, my teeth ache from the urge to touch her. I'm speechless, for I mustn't tell her. It's wrong now, but it won't be long now before my love discovers that she and I are lovers. Imagine how surprised she's bound to be. She loves me. She loves me. I love her. Isn't that a wonder? I wonder why I didn't want her. I want her, that's the thing that matters. And matters are improving daily. Yesterday I loathed her, bah! Now today I love her, ha! And tomorrow, tomorrow, ah! such delicious tingles. I'm trembling, what the hell does that mean? I'm freezing, that's because it's cold out. And still I'm incandescent, and like some adolescent, I'd like to scrawl on every wall I see. She loves me, she loves me.
Zachary Levy and the title track from She Loves Me, currently at the San Francisco Playhouse, sfplayhouse.org, for more information on that production, which runs through January 14th. With the holiday season now upon us, there's no shortage of opportunities to catch some terrific music in the Bay Area of all genres. If you're inclined towards the Baroque, you'd be wise to consider concerts being offered by Archetti next weekend in Palo Alto, Berkeley, and San Francisco under the auspices of the San Francisco Early Music Society. A program entitled Baroque Christmas Music for Soprano, Trumpet, and Strings has been assembled by Callum Moore and John Dornenberg, directors of Archetti, and featuring soprano Clara Rotzolk and Baroque trumpeter Catherine Aducci. We're hearing in the background one of the featured works, Johann Sebastian Bach's 51st cantata, Jauchzet Gott in Allen Landen, that'll be featured on the program. Here to talk about it is John Dornenberg, who, in addition to directing Archetti and the Sex Corday Consort of Viols, founder of the Baroque Ensemble Music's Recreation, is a virtuosic viola da gamba soloist, as well as recording some 20 CDs and more of both solo and chamber music on the instrument. And since 1988, John has been lecturer in viola da gamba at Stanford University and more recently at Cal Berkeley. John, a pleasure to welcome you back to our open airways to talk about this very special concert.
Thank you, David.
Well, how did this program come together to begin with?
Well, Archetti normally doesn't have guest artists. This is a very special evening for us because the Early Music Society invited us to assemble a Christmas concert every year. The Early Music Society does a very popular Christmas series. And they particularly wanted us to work with a soprano and a trumpet. So we had two excellent artists in mind, with Clara Rotzolk, who we've worked with many times through, I've worked with many times, that is, through groups like Magnificat, who has also done the Christmas concert in many years past. And Catherine Ducci is a wonderful Bay Area treasure. She's actually from Australia, but she teaches at San Jose State. And so she doesn't have to travel to do this. We're very lucky to have a real Baroque trumpet player in the area.
Nice, nice. Not the usual suspects. Well, there are a few of the usual suspects on the program. You've got some lovely Handel, the eternal source of divine of light divine, and Let the Bright Seraphims being performed, along with some Scarlatti, Telemann, Torelli, and Bach, and Francesco Manfredini, who I'm not all that familiar with.
Manfredini is Torelli's student, and they were based in, they weren't in Venice. They were based in Bologna. And so the way history has gone, we tend to pay a lot of attention to the musicians from Venice and Rome because those areas were so rich, and kind of overlook Bologna's musicians. But there was great music there. And they both happened to write concertos for Christmas Eve. So here we are.
The featured work for the trumpet, violin, and cello isn't necessarily a Christmassy piece, though.
It's not specifically Christmassy, but it uses the instruments in a very festive way, I should say. And the instrumentation for trumpet, violin, and cello is, I can't say anything's really unique in music, but it's unusual, put it that way. It has a very virtuoso violin part in particular, and we think that it may have been written for a fellow named Johann Piesendel, who was a friend of Telemann's and was the lead of his principal violin in his opera orchestra and things. He was a noted virtuoso at the time. So I think that explains why the violin part is so heavily weighted in that concerto.
Well, it's been a while since you've been on open air. Why don't you refresh people's memories about how Archetti was formed and what your mission is?
Well, Arcetti came together in 2010, and it was put together by Carla and I because we've been playing together since the 80s. She's in Music's Recreation, one of the groups you mentioned earlier. And we decided we've always wanted to have a really high-quality chamber ensemble, but bigger than a quartet, something that could actually do the mainstream concerto repertory. Most of these concerti grossi have 8-part books, so we have 8 players to deal with those 8 part books. And so we're really into the mainstream of the Baroque orchestral, so-called orchestral literature, with music by Handel and Bach and Vivaldi. And, you know, they all wrote great collections of concerti grossi. So that's really what we were formed to do.
So I mentioned the program, and how did you choose these particular pieces to go on this program?
Well, it's always interesting when you try to get together a classical Christmas concert. You come up against the fact that for people in the 18th century, the Christmas season was actually quite serious. And the time before Christmas was actually, the period of Advent, was one more of penitence and self-reflection.
It wasn't massive shopping and bargains?
I don't think they did that then, no. I mean, so I'd say in the pre-commercialized world, it was actually quite a serious time. So most of the music that we would do, if you're doing classical, has to come from after Christmas Eve. A lot of works were written specifically for Christmas Eve, and that's why we have the Manfredini and the Torelli. And in fact, the Scarlatti cantata that we'll be doing also tells the famous Christmas Eve story. The Italians in particular really love those shepherd stories. And so they like the idea of their tradition is that it was the shepherds who got there first, and shepherds in Italy play bagpipes, these instruments called zamponi. And so they turned up, and they think they serenaded the Virgin Mary and the baby Jesus in the crib. And that continues to today, where they still come down out of the mountains, and they still walk through Italian cities, and they play in front of all of the nativity scenes in creches scattered about town. So it's pretty easy to come up with that kind of music. But nobody really wants to hear that kind of bagpipe music for a whole evening. I mean, it's really, really charming, and it tends to be more like a lullaby than festive jumping around bagpipes for dancing.
It's interesting you should mention that. Yeah, of course, a pastoral would be, especially as part of a holiday, a Christmas celebration, of course, it's the shepherds. They're coming to serenade the Christ child.
And so they tend to be really beautiful, very simple, elegant melodies over, there's sometimes with a lot of droning, which would indicate the bagpipes, you know, these drone bass lines and so on.
But the pastoral movement comes in other cantatas as well, and other works.
Yes, and actually these became common property of the world after the Italians sort of came up with this idea. It really comes, all of these pastoral references with the droning bass of representing the drones on the bagpipes, that really came out of this Christmas Eve tradition of the Italians. It became everyone's property. These nice, like I said, simple melodies, drone basses, very symmetrical phrasing, and that still dominates the music of the bagpipers.
And so lovely to see that you're having some Alessandra Scarlatti on the program, which also is, I mean, the cantata itself is called a cantata pastorale.
Yeah, and that really tells the story. I mean, that, and it specifically mentions the bagpipers. In the last recitative and aria, it talks about the sweet sound of the bagpipes serenading the first breaths of the baby Jesus. It's very touching. It's most of us don't think of bagpipes as being all that sweet and touching, but somehow the Italians do. And the music that they wrote is very sweet and simple. It's very elegant without bumps and bruises.
Well, we do have a little bit of the Manfredini to serenade us out of this segment. This is from the work that's on the program of Arcetti, the Concerto per il Santissimo Natale, Opus 3, number 12. And we're listening to that now as we segue to our next segment here. Arcetti, under the direction of Carla Moore and John Dornenberg, presents Baroque Christmas music for soprano, trumpet, and strings. Special guests Clara Rotzalk, soprano, and Catherine Aducci on Baroque trumpet. Friday, December 9th at First Presbyterian Church in Palo Alto, Saturday the 10th at St. John's in Berkeley, and Sunday, December 11th at 4 p.m. at the First Unitarian Universalist Church here in San Francisco. John Dornenberg, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
And we look forward to catching the concerts.
Great.
Dulcet sounds of Arketti. Information about their concerts this weekend at sfems.org. I'm David LaTalib. You've been listening to Open Air here on 91.7 KALW. My thanks to Niels Swinkels for producing and organizing our calendar of guests. If you've got a sequence of performers or some sort of ensemble you'd like featured on Open Air, by all means, let me know. Send me an email, david@kalw.org. And a reminder that all of our shows are archived at our website, kalw.org. Thanks for listening.